Hi, I'm Bella Gandhi, founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host of this beautiful podcast. We're here to bring more love into your life, regardless of if you're single, if you're married, if you're thinking about becoming single, if you're thinking about becoming married or finding the lid to your pot. And we're going to bring more life into that love that you have or you want. You might have seen me on Good Morning America or Steve Harvey or The Today Show or 100 other places, but I'm so happy that you are here with us because we're going to make your life and your love better. Smart daters, welcome back. I am so excited to share this conversation with you today with my new friend, Carol Cullen. Carol is amazing. She is all about attachment. She is all about relationships. And who doesn't need some more of that? You know, we talk about fixing your pickers, meaning how you're picking people, maybe even how you're picking romantic partners or your friends. So Carol is a licensed marriage and family therapist, clinical supervisor, public speaker, certified Gottman couples therapist, does EFT, is based in North Carolina, and is also a practice founder and a mother of two teenagers, which we just bonded over in our little green room. So Carol, welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to be here with you and talk about my favorite topic in the whole world, couples.
Oh my God, let's jump right in. Go, tell me something.
Let's do it. Oh my gosh. Well, couples have been my passion for as long as I can ever remember. Just thinking as far back as being just a little girl, watching my two older sisters date and being fascinated with the boyfriends they bring home. They were 10 years older than me.
Oh, wow.
And just wondering, 10 and 7 years older than me. So I would just be in awe of these guys they would bring home and like wondering, is it going to work out? What are they going to wear on their date? Just being so excited all the time to watch it, you know, unfold in front of me. And then as I got older, just in my own relationships, just always trying to figure out, is it going to last, right? What makes love last? What do you have to do in a relationship to make it last? And trying to unlock that secret recipe, right? Like, what is the magic that they put in the recipe for these couples that make relationships work? And just trying to figure it out always. And then becoming a couples therapist and helping couples figure out what their magic, you know, ingredient is in their recipe to make their relationship work. It's just always fascinated me. And I love helping couples and showing them how they can do it and watching that unfold for them. It's just amazing.
I love that. And since we're talking about vulnerability, I mean, do you have any red flag relationships in your past that helped you to learn? Did you join the pod of the rest of us that have basically?
Too many to count. I love to date a bad boy.
Who doesn't?
And just started to really realize I wasn't getting my needs met, right? And you start to wonder, there's a common denominator here. I got to start looking at myself, right? And make some really better choices and try to understand why my picker was broken, right? And to really assess what is it that I really do want. And I did end up finding my husband in my pool of best friends. We were best friends for 2 years and decided that I was going to try a good guy and go with someone who actually was a good friend to me and someone I can count on. And they were there. They would show up when they said they were going to show up and they were accountable and we had a lot of fun together. And I was a little bit older when we met and got married at 31 and we've been married 20 years. So it worked out. It's trying something different, not going for that bad boy, but going for someone who actually was, you know, reliable and showed up and fun and my best friend. And that just seemed to work out better for me. So, but yeah, I've had my pool of bad dates.
Oh my gosh. Our stories sound so similar. I've told this on the podcast many times. I married my male best friend of 6 years and through, you know, one red flag, bad boy from another. And with you guys, was there an underlying attraction or was it you literally saying, wow, okay, I'm going to get my mental house in order. That looks like a good guy. and he's cute. And did your chemistry develop before his? I'm always fascinated because people always say, well, you've got to have chemistry right away. And the answer, the short answer to that, and you know this, smart daters, is no, you don't.
No, you don't. I think that we initially bonded as best friends early on, but the attraction was there in the beginning. So it was there, but we kind of didn't pay attention to it because we each were in our own relationships. So it was kind of like undertones and simmering, right? And then after relationship after bad relationship, and you know, and I look around and I'm like, you know what? I don't know if you've done this, Bella, but it's like, you know what? I'm not dating anymore. I've had it, right? I'm done.
I'm done.
I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to focus on me. And that's what I did. And a month later, we ended up talking about having a relationship and being together, right? And it's kind of like once you figure out, like, I want to focus on me and keeping the people around me that bring me joy and that are important to me and just focusing on those friendships, it kind of blossomed from there. Like once you give up all that pressure of I've got to be in a relationship, I've got to find the right person, or just, you know, seeking out things that are just not healthy for you, the good things come and it naturally unfolds. And I try to explain that to my clients sometimes. Like it will happen and you will know it's right when it's right. How do you know it's right? How do you know it's right? I can't describe to you what it feels like, but it's a sense of like completeness when you're with the person that's the right fit for you. You just know it. And I can't tell you when you're going to know it or how you're going to know it, but you're going to know it. And then they come back to me a little bit later. It's like, okay, I know. Now I know what you're talking about, right?
Oh, well, if this helps you, the word that we use as our goalpost at Smart Dating Academy for our clients is,
yeah,
you know, when the relationship is easy.
Yeah.
Easy is so good. And easy doesn't mean no conflict. Easy right. means we get along.
Yeah.
If you want Chinese food and I want Indian food, we'll figure it out. We'll go, okay, then we'll do Indian tomorrow. Okay. And if we have a That's conflict, right. we can navigate it easily. Nobody's throwing knives at each other, right? So easy is such an easy, good word that I want you guys to keep in mind about how do I know it's right? And at a certain point, you're willing to step out of the arena. Like, I'm done with this game of musical chairs. I want to get out. Is this person good enough for me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I want to clarify, easy doesn't mean boring, right, Bella?
No. Like
some people are like, easy sounds so boring. I don't want to be in a boring relationship where I'm not attracted to boring. That is not what easy means. Easy means, like you said, we get along, we manage conflict, we enjoy spending time together, whether it's just sitting, being quiet, reading, or doing something exciting. We naturally find ways to have fun together no matter what we're doing. It does not equal boring, right? Boring is not good. Nobody wants to be in a boring relationship where there's no attraction or no desire or no fun. That's not good.
When my clients say, this is boring, that's boring, I'm like, sounds like you have a little bit of an attachment issue where you want to be activated. You want your anxiety to kick in, right? Fear and anxiety mm-hmm. are very closely related emotions. So I'm like, let's talk about this boring thing. And they're like, oh boy, here we go. I'm like, let's mm-hmm. get into it. So, mm-hmm. so yes.
Right. Like consistency is important. Right. Consistency doesn't have to be boring. Reliability doesn't have to be boring. But consistent and reliable connection is critical for a healthy relationship. So that is a part of an easy connection, but it doesn't have to be boring. And some people see that reliability, accountability, dependability as boring. And you're right. You got to look at yourself then and say, what about that is boring to me? And what is it that's exciting to me? Because maybe what I think is exciting is just more anxiety producing behavior from a partner that's not really connected.
Right. Bad boys are bad. Bad girls are bad, guys. And if those are the kinds of people that have been your jam and you're 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 years old, and you've been in that mosh pit for a long time, maybe turn the mirror around. And instead of saying there's nobody good out there and saying, I only attract the wrong people, it's about who are you accepting into your dating life? And some of this could be if you're, you know, it's boring, boring, boring. I want the exciting roller coaster. It could be things that you saw at home with your parents.
Definitely. Right? We learn about relationships from our parents, and what we see and what we experience growing up is kind of like the foundation for what we expect in a relationship and what we expect, how we expect ourselves to be treated in a relationship. But that doesn't mean that that is what we deserve. It's just what we know. So knowing what you want and understanding what you deserve in a relationship is really important, because then you set an expectation. And I don't know if you've gotten this too. Lots of folks saying to me, are my expectations too high? Am I too demanding? Do I want too much? And I'm like, I don't see how you expressing what you need as ever being too much or too high. You're just dating the people who can't meet those expectations.
Absolutely. And especially, you know, I always say, be picky about the right things.
That's right. That's right.
If he lives a little further than you want, if she's a little taller than you, whatever it is, be flexible on those things, but on your needs and what you want to have a really good, easy relationship, consistency, reliability, that this person is an elevator person for you, that they elevate you, they lift you up just like your best friends do.
That's right. And they make you feel secure and you feel attached and bonded to them in a way that's deeper than you would in a relationship that's chaotic, unstable, high conflict. Sure, there's adrenaline rushes with that. There's, you know, there's the great makeup sex. There's the great, you know, coming back together and then, oh, the anticipation after a breakup. But that's not going to fulfill you. And it's not emotional maturity. It's not healthy communication. And definitely it is a huge risk to be vulnerable with your partner in a relationship like that. And that's not ultimately going to be a long-term healthy partner for you.
100%. And do you think, I'm always curious about attachment, and we always talk about our parents as role models, but then you see three different siblings out of the same house, same uterus, same parents, right? Completely. It's like two are happily ensconced in relationship. And then there's that other one. Do you think that there's a genetic component to this as well?
I do. And I think I think that there is some like predetermined way that we're wired in utero, right? There's something happening in utero during the pregnancy that they're learning more in neuroscience about the way that the brain is formed in utero and how the attachment with the parent is, you know, forming different types of attachment bonds. The way that they were delivered, was there some trauma in delivery? A lot of these really early traumatic events or bonding situations help to form the early experiences that we see as attachment later on in relationships. So in even things that you may not even remember as a toddler or a young child, how you attached with each parent can shape and form how you connect with your partner later on and potential partners later on. And so you could see three different children, but maybe they each had a different pregnancy, different delivery, toddler, you know, age, early childhood development, and that's going to affect. I do think gender plays a part too. Not that I'm going to stereotype one gender or another has a particular way of attaching, but I think that growing up in a household being one gender versus another can also play a part depending on the parents and their relationship, to those children. So I think it shapes and forms different ways of attaching later on in those early childhood experiences, for sure.
I love that. I totally agree. So let's talk about the fear of being vulnerable in dating, right? Let's go there.
Yeah, it's scary to be vulnerable, right? Well, what do we mean when we say vulnerable to begin with? Right. That's where we start, because some people think that being vulnerable means on your first date, you're going to pour your heart out to a complete stranger and talk about, you know, your parents' divorce and, you know, your childhood experiences of, you know, getting bullied in seventh grade. And you're going to dump all of this on them in a first date. And that's what it means to be vulnerable. Whoa, don't do that, right? Don't do that on a first date. But what it means to be vulnerable is just to be exposed to another person in a way that allows you to take the risk of being hurt potentially. in the future, right? That somehow I'm exposing my very soft, vulnerable parts of myself that maybe down the road could be hurt by disappointment, rejection, you know, a relationship ending. You could be hurt. And so you're not pouring your soul out on a first date, but you're allowing yourself in a very brave way to show parts of yourself that are able to be hurt. And you don't do it all at once. You do it slowly over time. But that's what it means to be vulnerable in a relationship. And I think that in our culture, we see that as weakness sometimes. I think people define vulnerability as weakness when really it's kind of like a superpower of people in healthy relationships. When you're in a healthy, strong relationship, being vulnerable is like emotional intelligence. You learn how to be vulnerable with people around you that are safe to be vulnerable with.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? You have a partner that will take your vulnerabilities and wrap bubble wrap around them and protect them and say, oh my gosh, if that triggers you, I will never, ever do that or never, ever say that. And just know if I do, it has zero intentionality right behind it. Right. And that's so, right. And that's, I love that, you know, Brené Brown says vulnerable. What is it? Vulnerability without boundaries is oversharing.
Right. You don't want to do that on a first date. That's not going to get you very far. I don't think it's going to set you up for a really, really, maybe not a second date. Maybe there'll be no second date after that. Right. Because people do get scared by too much vulnerability too, all at once. It feels overwhelming if too much sharing.
Absolutely. And you, and I love what you said. The sheer act of going on a date is vulnerable, right?
It is, because you're setting yourself up to be seen in a way that probably in everyday life, going to work, taking care of kids, whatever it is that you're doing, you're not showing yourself and exposing yourself in this way. So going on a date, just showing up, I mean, there's vulnerability there. Like, is this person going to see who I am and like who, what they see, like who they see, right? That's vulnerability right there.
Exactly. So that in and of itself. And so it's always hard, I think, to figure out what to disclose, especially on a first date. I'm like, you know, be easy breezy. You know what your superpowers are, but you can also know what your human foibles are and be vulnerable and a little self-deprecating in that way. So you don't have to talk about having been bullied in seventh grade, because that's like, womp womp. Do you need to go to therapy to talk about that? Right. So right, there's a fine line with regards to being vulnerable. And maybe as I'm thinking about this, maybe on each date with somebody, you pick one interesting thing that maybe people don't know about you, and people have to earn your story. So maybe on date one, it's something like, I don't love raw tomatoes.
Right. It could be just sharing, being honest and sharing about your likes or dislikes, right? Like maybe you don't drink coffee, maybe you drink tea, and the next date that's suggested is let's go for coffee, right? Instead of going for that coffee, maybe say, you know what? I'm not particularly a fan of coffee, but there's this great tea shop I'd love to show you that I go to sometimes to read and just have some quiet and get away from the world. Love to take you there and share that with you. So you're sharing something intimate about yourself, but it's not too intimate where this person's going to, you know, it's not like your first date is your therapy session and you're sharing everything you would in a therapy session. Yeah. Right. Or maybe you even share something that you're proud of, right? It doesn't have to be these real insecurities that you're sharing. You can share something you're proud of too. Maybe that. There's an accomplishment or an achievement or something you're particularly good at. You can share that. Talk about that.
Yeah. And being excited about your life. And it's okay to be excited about your life and the things that you love and the people in your life that mean things to you and the promotion you just got at work or whatever it is, the home run you hit on your company softball team. But it's okay because that shows you as a person who is engaged with life and you're happy and you're doing things and something good happened to you and you're not worried about bragging, right? Bragging is so different than that.
That's right. And gosh, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking, gosh, what confidence, right? You step into this date sharing something that you're proud of. That's confident, and confidence is very attractive, I mean, you don't want to be overconfident, right? But a level of confidence is very attractive. And on a first date, that could be very interesting to this partner that you're potentially, you know, meeting and maybe wanting to have a second date with, that you want them to know, like, there are things that I'm proud of about my life. There are some things that I've really accomplished that I'm happy to share. And I'm confident in that and confident in who I am. That's really attractive.
100%. I love that so much. And someone who mocks that or makes fun of that or says, oh my gosh, look at you, braggadocious, that's a red flag.
Absolutely. There'll be no second date there.
Right. That's not an elevator person. That's the opposite. That's a dungeon person who takes you down to the dungeon. We don't need any of that. So let's talk about, you have 7 principles that make a relationship work. Do you want to take us through some of those?
Yeah. So I think what you're talking about is the Gottman method of couples therapy. And he wrote the book, John Gottman, The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work, right?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. John Gottman is an amazing researcher and scientist. And he's been one of the fathers of couples therapy and just researching couples in a completely different way. And when I first got introduced, I met John early on at a conference and just got introduced to his method of therapy. I was like fascinated because I'm really into science and I'm really into research. And his model was based on research of couples for a long, long time, many, many years, 20, 30, it's got to be maybe 40 years now. So that in itself was very interesting to me because, like I told you, I wanted to know what the magic ingredient was to make relationships last. And I needed a formula. To me, I needed a formula because it's so, you know, mysterious, right? Like, gosh, what is it? How do you know? And what do you do? And what do you work on first? And is having a date every week important? Or is it more important to manage conflict? Like, what is it that makes relationships really, really work and last forever? And I felt like he had found the recipe with the 7 principles. So I was very, very eager to learn more about that and ended up going through his program and becoming certified. And this is what I teach my couples. So Well, I'll tell you the secret. You ready for the secret?
I am, Carol. Yeah. Lay it on me.
Good stuff. Okay. So if you think about relationships as having different areas that they need to have strength in, the first area would be a really strong friendship, which kind of speaks to your relationship and mine, right? It started out as a friendship. Yeah. And John Gottman talks about, you know, he defines and breaks it down what a friendship really looks like. But what he really, you know, what he really means is, this is someone that I know really well. I know the answers to really intimate questions about them in their inner world. And I remember the answers to those questions. So I know what their biggest dreams are and their hopes. I know what their current life stressors are. I know what their favorite restaurant and meal is. I know what helps them to feel safe and secure in the relationship. And I know what makes them feel loved. And I remember the answers to those questions. And we talk about it frequently. He calls this love maps.
Yeah.
So I have a love map with my partner and I understand all of these really important things about them because I ask questions and I am curious about them and try in every possible way to get to know them on a deeper level on a daily basis, right? So a lot of times people meet and they do this early on and they have strong love maps early on. But as time goes on and their relationship grows and stressors play in and kids and work, we stop asking the really important questions. And we stop remembering the answers and we forget that our partner is really a friend to us. And that's the basis and the foundation of our relationship. We stop becoming friends and we just start becoming roommates or people who live together and share a life, but don't really talk about the deeper, more important things by asking open-ended questions and getting to know each other. So the first secret is friendship. And that has 3 parts. So it's 7 in total, 3 parts, love maps, turning towards, and appreciations. So love maps is knowing your partner. Appreciations is it's a vulnerable thing to do, but it's sharing what you appreciate about your partner every single day. And not just saying thank you, like thank you for throwing the garbage out, thank you for picking the kids up, thank you for doing the grocery shopping, but appreciations for who they are as a person. So I really appreciate what a good dad you are. You spent time with our son talking about things that were really important about his future and career and, you know, college choices, and you really took an interest. And I really appreciated that about you. You're such a good dad and you're so patient, right? So you're appreciating the person and the qualities, and you're sharing that with them on a daily basis. I think a lot of times we think these things in our mind, but the words don't ever leave our lips. So the thing about appreciations is the words need to leave your lips and you need to say them to your partner frequently.
And I love it. It's not just thank you for taking the trash out. It's like, thank you for being a really attentive husband and understanding that my love language is acts of cleaning service. And the fact that you take out the trash means the world to me, even though you hate it, but I see you.
That's right. I see you. I see who you are, and I appreciate those qualities, not just the thank you. So that's the difference.
I love that. And I know Gottman, Carol, has a ratio of positive to negative interactions that one should have. And I love, for you guys know me, you know, I'm a former finance person turned dating coach. So I love numbers and models. So is it like 17 to 1? Or talk about this if you remember it off the top.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's the next on the list. It's turning towards. So in a relationship, we turn towards our partner's needs frequently. We should frequently turn towards our partner's needs. And in a healthy relationship, we do that one in 10 times. I'm sorry, we should do that 10 times and have only one negative for every 10 positive.
Mm.
Right. So that's the ratio. One negative turning away for every 10 positive turning towards. And this is like money in a bank, right? You're talking about finance. So the friendship is where the emotional bank account lives in a relationship. So if you think about like a little love bank, and every time you turn towards your partner in small ways and big ways, showing them you care, you're listening, you're paying attention, I see you, I appreciate you, money in the bank, money in the bank, money in the bank, right? And for every one time that there's something negative that happens, maybe it's a miscommunication, disconnection, maybe a small conflict, whatever it is, that's a withdrawal out of the bank. Mm. So every time you withdraw, it's big, right? It equates to 10 positives. So those withdrawals, even though it's just one negative, it equates to the 10 positives. So your bank account needs to be overflowing with positivity on a daily basis, because when things go wrong, it's a big hurt. And it takes a lot of money out of the bank. So you want a really full emotional bank account in your relationship, so that when something does happen, you have a cushion to fall back on that feels safe and secure. So that's the ratio, 1 in 10.
I love that. And you guys, take this to the next level, right? You need to also have an emotional bank account with yourself. You need to have, if you know, for example, you know, my husband, Andy, he can look at my face, and if he thinks I'm mad, he will, like, he gets this expression and it goes into this negative vortex. And we always talk about that. So now I know, as part of my turning towards his need for me to be happy and okay with him, I'm like, hey, if you detect I'm a little quiet today, this happened at work today, or I'm contemplating something that's going on with our college daughter, and it's kind of on my mind right now. So this is what you might sense from me. And it's a game changer. And that's not totally an appreciation, but that means, I think to your point, Carol, is he needs to feel secure. He needs to feel like I'm okay and I'm happy with him. And I know that. And if I'm not okay, my act of turning towards him is saying, here's what's up with me, and it has nothing to do with you. We're all good.
Yeah. I think over communication is so important in a relationship. Sharing what's on your mind, what's on your heart, just letting your partner know all the little things that you think are not important. But if you share them, it does. It makes conflict way less frequent, because they know what's going on in your world. You're sharing your love maps. You're saying, here's what's on my mind. Here's what's concerning me. I'm sharing a part of myself with you. And that helps them to understand you better. So when later on that evening, you have a look on your face and he's not so sure what's going on. He knows. He says, well, I'm a good friend to her. I know her love map. She's upset about something going on with our daughter at college, right? So he knows because you've shared a part of yourself in an intimate way through love maps, right? So oversharing when you're in a relationship, not on a first date, right? Let's be clear. But oversharing about what's going on for you.
26 years.
Yeah. That's right. This is what makes relationships work, is when you can look at your partner and you know, like, oh gosh, I can tell she's in her head about that. I can tell. I know because we talk about it, because we share what's going on for us in our inner world, in our internal world. I know that. And that's what makes a great relationship. Absolutely. I love that. Mm-hmm. Oversharing.
And sometimes people say, pick your battles. Like, don't sweat the small things. I think the small things can become death by a thousand paper cuts.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So the next thing on in the Gottman seven principles would be managing conflict. And what they say is, don't hold on to stuff. Don't hold on to it. Healthy couples share what's bothering them right away. They don't hold on to it and build resentment. They share it. But what they do is they share it in a particular way. They talk about how they feel about a neutral event rather than criticizing or blaming their partner. They share it from their perspective. So I feel really hurt because we were supposed to have a date on Friday night and it got rescheduled, and you haven't tried to reschedule it with me. And I really need us to connect on a weekly basis because our lives are so busy. See, so it's kind of neutral. So like, you don't care about me. You didn't think about how that inconvenienced me. And, you know, you don't want to spend time with me because you only want to spend time with your friends. You make time for your friends, not for us, right? That's critical blaming. But when you talk about how you feel, like, I feel really hurt, I feel lonely, right? I'm feeling disconnected because we didn't get our regular weekly time together. I really need us to make that a priority. It feels different. That's called a softened startup.
I love that. I love that so much. And, you know, one of the ones we will also use is the story I'm telling myself.
Love that.
So let's say, to your example, the date was canceled because he had to work. And now I start to feel sad. I start to feel disappointed. I start to feel disconnected. What we have come in our relationship for real to do is, hey, the story I'm telling myself is the fact that you haven't yet rescheduled our date yet means I'm less important to you than I was last month. Am I telling myself a story? I'm telling you, Carol, it has been a game changer in my own relationship, because what it does for us is it has put the mirror up to myself, the story I'm telling myself. And subconsciously, what it tells him is, this is my stuff. This is a me problem. Am I interpreting this the right way? Basically, what he feels is I'm giving him the massive benefit of the doubt, and it's innocent until proven guilty. And it has changed the cadence and the amplitude of our disagreements.
Yeah, I love that. Just the word story in itself, right? Means like, this is just something made up, right? Like, I'm kind of making this up in my own head. I need to know if it's real or not real. We do that. We do real or not real. Like, is this real or not real? Like from the Hunger Games. I don't know if you remember
totally.
That. Yeah. You're real or not real?
Real or not like, real. Right.
Real or not real. And then your partner can check in with you and say, not real, or that's just a story. Let me tell you what's really going on. What's going on for me? I've been so busy at work. It hasn't slipped my mind. I wanted to surprise you with something fantastic to make up for it. And I just haven't been able to get the tickets to your favorite show yet. Now you ruined the surprise. No, I'm just kidding. But right, like, there's something more going on that I want to share with you. It's this story you're telling yourself is, I'm sorry that you're feeling hurt by that. Let me tell you what's really going on, right? Yeah. But I love that because it kind of externalizes the problem a little bit too, right? It's not saying you're the problem. It's saying I'm having this problem, you know, with the way I'm thinking about this. And that's right. Always better than saying you're the problem.
What? And it's like the ultimate turn towards each other, right? It's giving you the benefit of the doubt. The story I'm telling myself is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I love that. You guys came up with a good way to handle that.
Oh, yay. Are we doing okay as a couple?
I think so. I think you're doing it. So far, so good. So far.
We're tracking. We're tracking.
That's right.
Well, I love that. And, you know, and we talk about secure attachments and how do we create secure attachments with our partners? And I think this really kind of what we're talking about is the ultimate in creating those secure attachments. It's being open, being communicative, being honest, being kind, taking responsibility for your own feelings, because in that, your partner will feel the four letter word. They'll feel safe.
That's right. You want to create safety, not just for yourself in the relationship, but for your partner, because you want to make a safe space for them to feel like they can come to you and talk about their needs, their concerns, their worries, their fears. And that way it becomes a good model for vulnerability, right? If I can really be present with you and create a safe space for you, then you'll know what it looks like and feels like to create a safe space for me so that we can bond and have a secure attachment. That's so important. So you have to, it has to go in both directions, right?
In both directions. And for those of you that might be listening and you're in a relationship or you're in a marriage and you might be going, oh my God, we're not tracking for any of this right now. Like, is this salvageable? I would say it could be. Would you agree? Right. It could be.
Absolutely. I always have so much hope for couples that come to see me and they are truly in really bad places by the time they get to me. Most of the time, I specialize in seeing couples that are on the brink or in severe crisis. So by the time couples come to me, it's been pretty bad. But I always keep hope for them in my heart, and I always am hopeful for their relationship. And so many times we're able to turn things around really pretty quickly. Because once they start to understand how they got where they are and they can see their own part in that journey and take accountability for their part, they start to have some more empathy towards each other. And then they can allow themselves to be vulnerable again, knowing that their partner is taking accountability and creating a safe space. Once they can do that and they can repair that bond, it just makes things better in so many different ways, and they can start to heal the relationship really pretty quickly because they're kind of getting back to a place where they felt safe earlier in the relationship. They're kind of remembering, their body kind of remembers that feeling. And so it's not a new territory. It's old territory that they're, you know, healing in themselves and in their relationship. So things turn around pretty quickly once we can get to a place of accountability, understanding, and vulnerability.
Wow. So it's accountability for your part in this, instead of going, you did this and you did that. Well, he's going to say, and you did this and you did that. And can you sit there and can you hear it?
That's also vulnerability, right? Being able to sit there and listen to how you've hurt your partner is really, really hard, right? Because that hurts to know that you've hurt someone that you love, and having to hear it from your partner, all the ways in which you've hurt them, is to be vulnerable and to be able to sit there and non-defensively take that in. But that builds trust in a relationship, and it helps your partner to feel safe with you when they can share with you how they've been hurt in the relationship, and that you sit with that and you can hear it. It doesn't mean that you take all the blame. It doesn't mean it's all your fault, but that you can sit with it and accept influence from your partner and hear it is huge. And it is a necessary tool for couples in order to be successful, is being able to accept influence from your partner.
And that's exactly right. I mean, I know so many of you that are working with us in one-on-one coaching, even, you know, you've had partners that are not invested in keeping the relationship together, right? And I'm sure you're listening to this and going, that was not my husband, or that was not my wife or my partner. It's like they knew it was over and they were going to couples therapy just to sort of like stamp it, like, did my job, tried this. People that have maybe found somebody else, right? They've had an affair and they know they want to pull the plug. From that standpoint, again, that person isn't or would never take the accountability, right? And so if you're listening to this and this was your experience, just know we see you and we're sending you big hugs. It takes two people that want this to work.
Absolutely. And sometimes people don't deserve your vulnerability.
Amen.
They don't deserve it. It's a gift. And you can't just be willing to give that away to just anybody. Even if you've been in a marriage for 20 years, you don't just give that away if the other person is not going to bubble wrap it and take really good care of it. If they're not going to protect that part of you that's vulnerable and showing itself, then they don't deserve it. And it's a gift that they don't get to have. So learning and understanding who is the right person to share that vulnerability with and then how much to share and at what pace is really important. And I think couples therapy can really, and coaching can really help you to figure out if you've made this mistake, you know, with the wrong people and you kind of keep, you know, maybe your pickers off and you just keep doing this. It might be helpful to work with someone that can help you to understand who is a safe person? Who are people you can trust them? What kinds of things do you look for in a person and in a relationship to know that this person is someone you can trust with your heart?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that, you know, I'm so happy that's been our superpower for 14 years is helping people to get out there, be brave in the arena, be vulnerable and pick partners that are good for them. Because again, we're not taught how to do this, right? I wish what you do and what I do was taught when we were in high school. Can you imagine how different the world would look?
I know. I am really going to push for a high school course on dating. Don't you think they do? They do personal finance courses now in high school. And thank goodness they do that. They teach them how to, you know, balance their checkbook and have a good credit score, but nobody teaches them about dating. And yet they're all dating.
And it's the most important thing to be taught is who should you accept into your dating life, right? And so many of our clients are like, where were you 20 years ago or 30 years ago? So I'm so with you on there should be a mandatory course on this. Maybe we'll have to hatch our ideas off.
I'd love it.
I think, you know, and you've got teenagers and I've got teenagers and we do our best to impart that wisdom to them, you know, and now, you know, I think that we can change the trajectory of future relationships. But speaking of relationships, I think many people that, you know, go through Smart Dating Academy, we start to see signs of people that are avoidant. Maybe their attachment systems, you know, I call them, there's like broken koala bears, like they want to attach, but they've got four broken legs. They can't do this. Can someone, if you figure out you're in a relationship with someone avoidant, what do you do?
That is a really hard question to ask without knowing both parties. But if you're only working with the one person and they're telling you, look, this partner, they're not reliable. Like they say they're going to do things and then they don't. They make plans and then they break them. They say things that I think they really mean and are important to me and then they don't follow through. Those are signs to find a new partner.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, you're setting yourself up to be pretty hurt in that relationship. If this is really early on, I think that that could be a really risky move to continue and move forward in that relationship. If you're already seeing signs of someone that's really just not as committed as you are, to you and to having a relationship. I think being honest pretty early on about what you need and what you want. Like, I want a committed relationship. I want a monogamous relationship. I am looking to get married or not get married. Being honest about what your goals are for dating right out of the beginning kind of nips that in the bud pretty quick. Maybe you can speak to that, Mel. I think because if you get with someone who's not really wanting that and you're pretty clear about what you want from the beginning, you're probably not going to have too many more dates after that. So being honest with yourself about what you want and verbalizing that will mitigate that a little bit. But if you find yourself kind of in this relationship and this person just not showing up for you and is a constant source of pain, it may be time to consider being honest with this person about why you don't think it's a good match.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking a little bit offline about, you know, maybe people that are avoidant, maybe they just never learned how to use words, but people that can behave in a loving way, but they can't say the words. How do you feel about me? Do you love me? People that have trouble with the L word. Have you seen that? Or do you have any tips around this? Because I hear it more often than I think I should.
Yeah, it's interesting. And, you know, when I think about that, we need to hear the words, because the actions alone are, they're wonderful, they're great, but we need to hear the words because they mean something to us. And when someone doesn't say it, that also means something. We tell ourselves a story about that. And that story lives inside of us and grows and creates insecurity in a person and in a relationship. So I think if you're a person that needs to hear those words to feel secure in a relationship, you need to talk to your partner about why that's so important to you and what it means to you, and help them to understand that this is something you need them to work on in the relationship. And if they are not willing to work on that, you need to consider that this may not be a good fit for you, because you're talking about a lifelong commitment here and being in a committed relationship with someone who is not willing to do the work to give you what you need and something that's so important as feeling loved and secure. That's a big issue that can grow between partners over time and create a big resentment and a big hurt.
I totally agree with you 100%. Carol, you are amazing. I couldn't have enjoyed this conversation anymore.
Thank you.
And if people want to learn more about you, how can they follow you?
Sure. They can follow me on Instagram and all the other social media outlets at MyTherapistNC, like North Carolina. So MyTherapistNC, or go to our website, MyTherapistNC.org. Oh. And they can check us out there. It's been so great talking with you. I feel like we could talk about this for days and days and never stop talking about relationships. It's my passion for sure. And I can see it's yours too.
Well, like I said in the beginning, my new friend, Carol. So yes. I'm very glad to call you a friend. So smart daters, if this has inspired you to take some actions, do something. Watch a relationship video. Get a book. Fill out a form on our website. Come to us if you're finally willing to take that plunge. And remember, dating numbers are starting to tick up again. And what happens in December? It's peak dating season. So we're getting into October almost. The leaves are changing. So think about, do I want to be in the same place a year from now that I am today? And if the answer is yeah, keep doing what you're doing. And if the answer is no, it's time to change something. So ask yourself with love, what is that going to be? So until next week, I bid you farewell and see you next Monday.
Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.